Hi, this is Charles at democraticfundamentalism.org. It's Friday, December 13th, 2002. This is the News in Review. Well, it was a busy weekend last weekend for the military-industrial complex. Those guys, they just love war, you know. And up until Monday, they'd say practically anything to cause it, till a bunch of movie stars got together and sent a letter to Bush telling him to knock off the rhetoric. White House announced Treasury Secretary O'Neill's replacement. It's John Snow, another former Nixon Ford administration member. There's a pattern going on there. Al-Qaeda has made another threat, saying that if we attack Iraq, they'll attack us. Meanwhile, from the sounds of it, the vice presidential home occupied by Dick Cheney is getting an upgrade. Some theories are that they're building a bunker or underground tunnels, like Hitler did in Berlin. Well, that's not a personal remark, by the way. That's just history. Remember, you have to look at the past to see the future. It's all about how history repeats itself. Speaking of such things, most people think that the Roman Empire fell because of moral decay leading to the collapse of the culture. Well, I've got a review of a book that will refute that, as well as tell you what we'll be dealing with soon as global warming begins to overtake the planet. More future and past kind of stuff. 14,000 birds have died in the Great Lakes area, and scientists say it's just the tip of the iceberg. There have been two more reported cases of the West Nile virus in Florida, and we've had the worst outbreaks of the Norwalk virus in 20 years. That's the one that's been, you know, causing problems on the cruise ships. Even though Bush has no policy for the well-being of the American people other than discriminating for faith-based charities, at least the Democrats intend to work toward extending jobless benefits for the unemployed. Remember the corporate scandals? In entertainment, looks as though some censorship is going on. There's a CD that sold some 3.5 million copies since November 18th, but it wasn't released in the United States and Japan for some reason. It has to do with something called escapology. I'll tell you what that is. Tom Petty's got a great new CD out, too. It's called The Last DJ. And we got more on that front, too. Meanwhile, dear sweet Trent Lott let his true colors show. In this case, it's not particularly beautiful. Said it before, I'll say it again. Anyone who does not fully support equality and human rights should not be in a position of leadership in this country. Before we get into the news, I want to welcome those linking in from other sites and let you know that on democraticfundamentalism.org we have links to full stories concerning the topics I'll be talking about. Just go to News in Review from the front page of democraticfundamentalism.org and select the text version of this report. You'll find the news links there. Music Mix 2 goes with every report. With that, let's get into the news. Most of which, by the way, is being supplied by CNN on their website. Great website. I got to tell you, they've been doing a heck of a job reporting from Qatar. I always get that wrong. Qatar. Anyway, here's a report for you. Buildup leaves U.S. military nearly set to start an attack in January. This actually from the New York Times. The United States will soon have enough heavy tanks, warships, aircraft, bombs, and troops in the Persian Gulf region to enable it to begin an attack against Iraq sometime in January, senior military officials say. About 60,000 soldiers, sailors, marines, and airmen, as well as about 200 warplanes, are in or near the region. The Army alone has 9,000 soldiers, 24 Apache helicopter gunships, and heavy equipment for two armored brigades in Kuwait. Equipment for a third brigade is steadily arriving on ships, usually based in the Indian Ocean, and some material will be stored at a new $200 million logistics base, Camp Afajan, south of Kuwait City. As one senior defense official put it this week, we're rapidly getting to the point where, if called upon, we'd be able to execute operations in Iraq. The steady buildup, brought together with little fanfare by air and by ship, is intended to put increasing pressure on the Iraqi government to disarm and perhaps to persuade Mr. Hussein's generals to defect or rebel against him. This is really their last chance to decide to either have a peaceful resolution, which requires giving up those weapons, or have us do it by force, that according to Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz. He said that in Turkey this week. Meanwhile, the Bush administration keeps stating that it has proof that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction and that they have evidence. Now, before I say anything else, I want to preface my remarks. I'm no fan of Saddam Hussein. I accept the possibility that his people are unhappy living under his rule and that he may indeed be a tyrant. I understand why Bush would want to trap him in a lie. And if Bush's true intentions were to disarm Iraq, though, and his real desire was for peace, he would have released that information beforehand in order to prove to other world leaders that Iraq must be confronted. Instead, he supposedly has information that he'd withheld in order to trap Saddam. I understand the strategy. It may work in court. But when you're talking about people's lives and a world of peace, it's a very deadly trick. To me, it simply proves that George Bush's only intent all along was to declare war for oil. One of the reasons that the United States declared its independence from the England and King George was because, and I quote directly from the Declaration of Independence, he has refused to assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Another complaint? He's erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, people like Jose Padilla could tell you volumes about things like this. Let's see, another complaint. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. You know, like Miranda rights, the right to privacy. Remember the Total Information Awareness System? He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death. That's one of the complaints against King George. Now, you may not know this, but the United States now employs mercenaries to augment the armed services. He's excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. Now remember, that was from the Declaration of Independence. In this case, we'll just note the correlation of Al-Qaeda's threats to our threats to attack Iraq, as well as the situation in Israel, where both sides are committing horrific acts, and the U.S. is doing nothing to help resolve the situation. They say they will, but they've said that many times. That's the way propaganda works. But there's more. We could actually say that the protests being planned by the International Action Center are causing the people to turn against the government and fellow citizens. Another complaint? In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. And I'm not talking about Hussein. Those, again, were just a few of the reasons listed by our founding fathers regarding complaints against King George, and therefore, our Declaration of Independence. The fact is that George Bush and his administration has put us in jeopardy with their aggressive war policies. They decided to deliver the axis of evil speech. War is the only real policy of this administration, and they're proving it more every day. Oh yeah, there is the destruction of the environment thing too, but we'll get to that later. Here's the latest threat from Al-Qaeda, by the way. The real threat to the United States, particularly because of our foreign policies. This from CNN, the headline, "Reputed Al-Qaeda Statement Threatens Israel and Its Allies." The Jewish Crusader Alliance will not, God willing, be safe from attacks anywhere, the speaker said. We will attack strategic interests with every means we have. We will use the weapons of fear against the Jewish Crusader Alliance so that they feel in danger, insecurity, and instability on land, at sea, and in the air. That, of course, the Al-Qaeda statement. Meanwhile, North Korea has decided to restart its nuclear program, and another axis of evil country, Iran, has been revealed as a nuclear power. As bad as it sounds, it may just be about electrical power. There seems to be a paranoia in Washington about other countries having anything that could threaten our domination of the planet. I think it's because the White House knows what they won't admit to us, that the Bush administration is stirring up a world of hornet's nests and putting us in danger for a corporate agenda. Jon Snow has been named to head the Treasury Department. He's replacing Paul O'Neill and another Nixon Ford staffer at the helm. The story again from CNN. President Bush has chosen Jon Snow, the CEO of CSX Corporation, one of the nation's biggest freight railroads, to replace Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill. Sources say the White House will also name Steve Friedman, a former co-chairman of Goldman Sachs, to replace economic advisor Larry Lindsey, who resigned along with O'Neill on Friday. The two men will try to gain the confidence of Wall Street while trying to communicate the administration's policies on tax cuts and other economic stimulus measures. Snow previously served during the Nixon and Ford administrations. According to information on the CSX website, Snow in the early 1970s was a Transportation Department deputy undersecretary and administrator of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Snow's nomination would require confirmation by the Republican-controlled Senate. Yep, another Nixonite. Keep in mind, the economy went through some very hard times with Nixon. A lot of it had to do with the Vietnam War and an economic plan that relied on war to create jobs and bolster corporate profits. It's odd, isn't it, that Cheney, Rumsfeld, Bush, now Snow, all were part of the Nixon White House. The military-industrial complex. Not all that complex, really. Secret blasts rattled Cheney's neighbors. This from CNN. Neighbors of Vice President Dick Cheney are being shaken and rattled at least once a day by mysterious blasts on the grounds of the U.S. Naval Observatory, where Cheney lives. The Navy says the explosions are part of a construction project that has been going on for several months now, but won't say more because the project is classified. Construction and blasting is expected to last an additional 8 months. Navy spokeswoman Kate Mueller described the work as an infrastructure improvement, a utility upgrade. Just remembered, she's a friend of mine. The Washington Post, which reported the issue Sunday, said David Gillard, the observatory superintendent, had sent the local neighborhood commission a letter noting that due to its sensitive nature in support of national security and homeland defense, project-specific information is classified and cannot be released. Sure, like a hardened bunker, I'll bet. Anyway, you know, that's what Hitler did in Berlin during World War II. You might think it's a little extreme for me to keep making comparisons to Hitler, but I assure you it's not personal. It's a comparison of certain socio-political manipulations and results over the last 500 or 600 years. When Ronald Reagan said, "We must look to the past to see the future," everyone in my generation thought it sounded really good, though we wondered what he really meant. It's kind of hard to figure out. We decided it must have meant that we should learn from the experience of the past, like we had, you know, made errors and should not make them again. You know, and the truth of it is, it does mean that, but it also means much more. If you were to read the following books on history, you would discover that what the Bush people have done is actually quite brilliant. Well, actually, it's the Republican Party, or certain people in the Republican Party. They've brilliantly studied the national leaders and conquerors and propagandists and religious leaders throughout all time, and have adapted the methodologies those leaders have used down through the ages to cause the citizens to think certain things, to cause citizens to accept unjust laws and restrictions, to persuade them to go to war based on aggressive war policies instead of real threats to security, and to accept economic hyperinflation and deflation as a turn of bad luck instead of the result of incompetent or non-existent economic and social programs that tend to the needs of the citizens instead of special or personal interests. Like I say, I don't have to make this stuff up. It's absolutely true. One day, I hope you'll at least skim over these books I'm going to tell you about. You'll discover what I'm telling you is true. The following four books, read as examples of repetitive patterns in history, will tell you what's actually going on in the world today. Now, it's not the whole story, but these will tell you the basic story. I could give you a bunch more books, but I don't want to give you too much homework all at once. First book I recommend you read, it's short but difficult read but worth reading, The Prince by Machiavelli. It's that one you keep hearing about. Another book, Warriors of God, Richard the Lionheart and Saladin in the Third Crusade. That's by James Rustin Jr. Another book for you, In the Wake of the Plague by Norman F. Cantor. An incredible book. I'm going to tell you more about that in a sec. And then, let's see, you could take your pick from the Bible if you want to read Ezekiel, Revelations, and Deuteronomy. It'll tell you everything about the strategy Bush is using. Of course, you could always read the Torah or the Koran and get just as much information. Truth is, I can personally identify seven specific socio-political methodologies being employed and being caused, and an additional two more of biblical nature occurring on a global scale. One of the most compelling books I've read is the book by Norman F. Cantor. He's a highly respected author who wrote In the Wake of the Plague, which was a New York Times bestseller. It's a very quick read and it explains a great deal. My favorite and most relevant passages to our current problems with global warming, though, relates to the fall of the Roman Empire. Really? Most people think that it actually fell because of moral decay and cultural destruction, but it was actually that so many people became ill and died due to the plague and other diseases that they ran out of people to grow food and care for the ill and raise the children. Everything that a country of people needs to support their culture. If you look around at what's happening in the world today regarding the health of this planet and its ability to continue to sustain life, think about this. 38 million people in Africa currently face the imminent threat of starvation. So many people are dying from AIDS that they're canceling school because of the teachers are dying. They close hospitals because the nurses and doctors are dying. So many people are dying that they're considering using abandoned mine shafts as mass graves for the people. And just last week, it was announced that many nations are on the verge of collapse because of the destruction of their infrastructure, just like Norman Cantor describes in his book, In the Wake of the Plague. It's incredibly compelling, and it's happening in many places in the world. The premier of Ethiopia has pleaded with the world to supply food and aid to save the lives of 11 million people. North Koreans have been near starvation for years, and now, despite axis of evil status, the United Nations has asked the United States to supply $201 million for food aid to stop the disaster. In the United States, 14,000 birds have died in the Great Lakes area. Experts say it's just the tip of the iceberg. The Audubon Society reported earlier this year that 25% of the birds in all of North America stand the chance of dying this winter due to lack of food. 50% of the United States and much of Canada are dealing with drought conditions. Crops have been reduced as much as 30% and 40% in the United States and Canada. And we've been dealing with the West Nile virus, E. coli, and all sorts of viruses, killing hundreds of deers, tens of thousands of fish killed for some mysterious reason off the coast of Florida. The list goes on and on. Remember, I don't have to make this stuff up. I really don't. By the way, last week, under pressure from environmentalists, Bush announced that he has come up with a plan to study global warming, as if we need to study it more to know that it's damaging this planet. And the planet is starting to get even with us, as always occurs with animals in nature when they've depleted food supplies and polluted the environment. The herd is thinned out until the environment can support it again. It's that simple. And this time around, we're the herd, and it's happened many times in the history of mankind. Next time, I'll talk about the significance of the book The Prince by Machiavelli and how that relates to Bush's faith-based charity programs. Really, I'm serious. Now let's lighten it up a little bit and talk about entertainment. First, an interesting thing that's not quite so light. There's a musician out there named Robbie Williams. He's part of a European boy band who decided to break away and cut an album on his own. So far in Europe, it's sold over 3.5 million copies since November 18th. That's an incredible number of CDs sold. Only one thing. For some reason, it hasn't been released in the US or Japan. I can't help wonder, but if the album has been banned. You might want to check it out, though. I've provided links to his website where you can give it a listen, as well as to places that explain the title of his album. It's called Escapology, which in essence teaches people how to escape from handcuffs, suitcases, all the stuff Houdini and other great escape artists do. You can order the album from Amazon UK. Hard to tell if they'll ship it stateside, though. My copy hasn't come yet. Tom Petty, he's great. He just released a new CD called The Last DJ. Interesting title. Haven't bought it yet, but I have heard it. Highly recommend it to you. You too will become a Tom Petty fan if you're not already. Here's something fun for you. Sylvester Stallone may be back. MGM has signed Stallone to write a Rocky VI screenplay with an update to the story of the scrappy Philadelphia boxer who rises from a club fighter to champion of the world, gets knocked down, then rises again, according to an MGM spokeswoman. Almost went into my Howard Cosell act. That's scary. Personally, I like the idea, but I was thinking, what if they had Will Smith play his adversary this time? Only this time, like with Apollo Creed, he gives the new kid a chance, and the new kid just happens to be a character a lot like Muhammad Ali. Wouldn't that be something? You can have that idea, guys, if you want it. Give me one more thing to giggle about. Speaking of a guy who, some say, talks too much, old Trent Lott finally stuck his foot in his mouth, as if he hadn't ever done that before. This from CNN. President Bush on Thursday sharply rebuked incoming Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott for comments that some have called racist, saying that any suggestion that segregation was acceptable is offensive and wrong. Bush's comments, delivered to a mixed-race audience in Philadelphia, came one day after Lott, a Mississippi Republican, said he would not give up his leadership post despite the furor over his remarks. Recent comments by Senator Lott do not reflect the spirit of our country, Bush said to loud applause. He has apologized, and rightly so. Every day that our nation was segregated was a day our nation was unfaithful to our founding ideals. I don't get out of that remark that Bush disagrees with him, but anyway, the comment in question was delivered 1 week ago during a 100th birthday party for the retiring Thurmond, party that often resembled the roast of the South Carolina Republican. Lott noted that in Thurmond's 1948 presidential campaign, whose centerpiece was segregation, Mississippi was one of four Thurmond carried. Lott said, "We're proud of it, and if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either." Remember, Trent Lott said that, not me. Another past incident also may come back to haunt Lott. Time has reported that Lott vigorously opposed desegregating his fraternity when he was a student at the University of Mississippi in the 1960s. You can check out the link to Time.com titled Trent Lott's Segregationist College Days. Lott, of course, insists he will not resign his leadership in the Senate, let alone his office as a senator. Typical tactic, ride it out till the trouble blows over, but on this one I don't think he can. Lott was absolutely wrong, and the remarks were revealing. You might want to call the Senate and tell them you believe Lott should resign, and most certainly should not hold the leadership position in the Senate. It really is time to put racism behind us in this country. People like Lott tend to keep it alive. With that, that's a wrap. This is Charles on DemocraticFundamentalism.org. Y'all take care.